Hello and welcome to the 58th episode of the Loopcast. Today I'm very happy to have Michael Sharnoff on the show, and we are going to talk about Jordan in lieu of the Arab Spring and also the effects that the civil war in Syria has had on Jordan with the amount of refugees that are coming over the border and so forth. So first of all, welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Yes, and I just want our guests and listeners to know that Michael is the founder and editor of Sharnoff's Global Views, and we'll be posting a website to his, a link to his website with this talk, so please check that out. And Michael is also a doctor. He has a PhD from King's College London in Middle East Studies, so we have a very special guest on the show today to talk about this issue. I mean, as we all know, the Arab Spring has caused a lot of turmoil within the region, and some countries have fared better than others. Of course, some have had more turmoil than others. But with this happening, Jordan's monarchy seems to have stayed very resilient in lieu of the Arab Spring. Why don't we discuss that a little bit, Michael?
Sure. I think that's an excellent point. There's certainly something to the nature of monarchies in the Arab Middle East. If you take a look at some of the monarchies like Jordan or Morocco or Saudi Arabia, they have certainly fared much better than the republican regimes in like Tunisia, Egypt, Syria, Libya with the strongman of Gaddafi. We just don't see that same kind of violence. And I think that has a lot to do with the nature of monarchies, the legitimacy that they bestow upon the people and receive. And in Jordan's case, I think that has something to do with the fact that the Hashemites are descendants of the Prophet Muhammad, and they have enjoyed a special relationship with their subjects.
Okay. I mean, I see that, but I also see that there has been a little bit of turmoil in the sense of this idea of Jordan's ruling monarchy as a government, but a ruling monarchy. I know that we saw a lot of protests earlier in the last couple of years, actually, since the Arab Spring, demanding King Abdullah II to give up power to an elected government. Of course, this has sort of calmed down, but I'm sure that underneath everything, there's still this seething. What do you think about that?
Oh, absolutely. And I just want to emphasize there are grievances in the monarchies. It's just we don't see that same level of violence. That's really what I wanted to kind of touch on and emphasize. The protests which began in Jordan in 2011 were primarily against price hikes and inflation, so it was more economic reasons. But Jordanians also demanded, like you mentioned, limitations on the king's powers, including transforming the monarchy from an absolute monarchy to a constitutional monarchy like the United Kingdom. And they want an elected prime minister instead of one appointed by the king. So I was just going to say the king has attempted to alleviate the situation by changing prime ministers. Jordan has gone through, I think, 6 different premiers in just 5 years. And the government says this represents Jordan's commitment to change and reform. However, critics say, you know, it's just window dressing and the king maintains true power.
Right. I mean, with the fact that the king basically has the power to consistently, we can just call it, fire these prime ministers, I mean, that sort of does leave the public feeling like potentially so, you know, the king has the power, and therefore, if he doesn't like the person that the prime minister or the choices that this person is making, basically, you know, he just kicks them out. I mean, do you see this feeling within the people of Jordan?
Absolutely. And like I said, those are all, real grievances that we are seeing. But it seems that in Jordan's case, the people are demanding, at least right now, more for reform and not necessarily regime change like we saw in other countries. And I think with the crisis in Syria, actually, with all the violence there, this is probably working in the king's favor because people who have been protesting in Jordan some of them may be now, you know, rethinking the wisdom of continuing their grievances, taking to the streets when they see the violence in Iraq, in Syria, you know, the recent transition with the ouster of President Mohamed Morsi in Egypt. And many Jordanians probably fear that, you know, if the king goes and if there's like a revolution, then the country will be totally destabilized and there will be chaos like all the neighboring countries.
Mm-hmm. I mean, do you see something like that potentially taking place in Jordan if, per se, the monarchy was overthrown? Do you think it would be a period of instability, or do you think there would be a transition that would be much more peaceful, say, compared to Egypt or Syria, for sure?
Well, you know, first of all, I don't think the monarchy is in danger of being overthrown, at least, you know, not in the foreseeable future. And I just to its throne since independence in 1946, even if you go back further when it was an emirate under the British mandate in 1921, and it has faced many challenges, you know, throughout the decades. However, I would say if things continue to boil over, especially with the rise of influx of Syrian refugees, which is a destabilizing factor, we have now something like 10% Syrian refugees in the country of Jordan out of 6 million. You know, no country can really sustain such a large influx of refugees, coupled with other things, other certain measures that the government has taken, such as restricting the internet. If I don't know if you're familiar with the kingdom last month censored about 300 websites.
Yes, I heard about that.
Yeah. So, you know, Jordan is certainly in a delicate situation, but as far as, you know, total revolution, overthrowing the monarchy, I personally don't see that happening anytime soon. And I'm not sure if Jordanians really want that. But of course, if that were to happen, you know, it would just be like another domino in the region of more chaos and instability.
Correct. And say if this, I guess we could call it reform that the Jordanian people are partly seeking, what do you think a reform to the rule of Jordan would look like, or the government in Jordan?
Well, I think what a lot of the opposition in Jordan, what they're insisting on is more of a, you know, fair representation in the Jordanian parliament, you know, a greater say for all of the Jordanian groups and societies, not just those that are supportive of the regime. So I think the kind of reform that Jordanians have been demanding is really just more about proportional representation and more, you know, more equality for all of its citizens.
And on that topic, of course, there is a Jordanian Muslim Brotherhood, and there seems to have been, especially recently, a lot of rift between the Muslim Brotherhood and the king and government of Jordan. And it seems like Jordan is at a crossroads with this brotherhood, and that there potentially could be two scenarios played out within the region. I guess one of them could be considered the Egyptian model, where there's a democracy with a lack of Islamist involvement, which we're seeing, of course, right now with Mohamed Morsi's ouster. Or you could also have more of, I guess you could call a Moroccan experience, where the Islamist, say for Morocco, the Justice and Development Party, could be incorporated into political life. Where do you see the Jordanian Muslim Brotherhood standing at this point?
Well, that's a great point. You know, Chelsea, it's a little unclear exactly what the Jordanian Muslim Brotherhood's ultimate goals are. You know, if you listen to their public declarations, they say, you know, we want reform, but not regime change. And we don't want to, you know, totally transform Jordanian society into something fundamentally radical. However, you know, as the Muslim Brotherhood, they are ideologically linked to, you know, the Palestinian Hamas and the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood, and we've seen how they've ruled. So, you know, it's difficult to say, but if we look at history, it would, you know, through logic, it would seem that they might follow a similar path to their ideological cousins. But from the, you know, Islamic Action Front, which is the political arm of the Jordanian Muslim Brotherhood, one of their major grievances recently has been the Jordanian election law. If you're familiar with that, you know, Jordan has had this one man, one vote election law in place since about 1993. And under that law, Jordanians are allowed to vote for only one candidate, which ends up typically favoring, you know, the Jordanian Bedouin and pro-regime loyalists. So, for instance, the Bedouin region of Karak, which has about 200,000 people, they receive about 10 members of parliament as representatives. However, Zarqa, which is a city of nearly a million with a significant Palestinian population, only 11 member of parliaments are represented. So the Muslim Brotherhood in Jordan and other opposition parties are demanding, you know, more of a say-so in their country's future and in their government. So, you know, it's difficult to see how all this will play out, but I think for sure we can anticipate a surge in greater demands from the opposition to limit the king's power and to have a greater say in Jordan. And whether this takes the form of violence or not, it's unclear.
Right. And I mean, I remember reading that the Muslim Brotherhood boycotted a recent election. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question? I couldn't hear you.
Oh, yes. I recently read that the Muslim Brotherhood in Jordan boycotted one of the recent elections. Is that correct?
Yes, yes, exactly. They boycotted the parliamentary elections in January of this past year, precisely because from their point of view, they felt that the voting system was rigged in favor of the Bedouin or East Banker Jordanians and you know, pro-regime loyalists. So they boycotted the election. So I would suspect that, you know, this kind of anger that's simmering under the surface, it definitely poses a threat to the Jordanian government.
Yes, and I mean, could we see a strengthening of this extremist movement rhetoric? So basically, like the dispute of the possibility of democracy, insisting that there needs to be an establishment of an Islamic state. So like basically the Islamic state versus a government state. Basically what you hear it with most Islamic groups, like there is democracy can't work. I mean, do you think that the Jordanian Muslim Brotherhood could go down this path and promote this rhetoric?
You know, it's certainly possible. And on the one hand, yes. But on the other hand, and that's why we have to be careful, I think the Jordanian Muslim Brotherhood is looking very closely at what happened in Egypt, like you said. And I think now that their ally has been ousted and what has been described as a coup, on the other hand, so they may feel like less confident to pursue their goals because they just lost a major ally in Egypt. So it's difficult to say.
Yeah, very much so. And I mean, I know the Jordan Minister of Foreign Affairs sent a letter off to Cairo fairly quickly after Mohamed Morsi's ousting, basically supporting the Egyptian army's ousting Morsi, and I'm sure that this doesn't leave the Jordanian Muslim Brotherhood feeling very confident at this point.
Absolutely. Jordan, the king was the first Arab leader to visit Egypt after the Egyptian military overthrew Morsi to congratulate the new transitional government. Jordan, along with, I believe, Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. So this is a big boost for the king. And kind of he can use this as justification for saying, especially to the West, see, it's either me or the Islamists, as kind of like the scare boogeyman tactic.
Right. And do you think he is playing that card of, because of course the U.S. has a lot of connections with the Jordanian monarchy and the government of Jordan. There's a lot of interaction between the two, funding, military involvement. And so, I mean, do you think King Abdullah II is playing this card with Egypt and with the U.S. saying, look, we're supporting this non-Islamist government. You know, we're not supporting Islam as part of democracy.
Sorry, I think you might have to repeat the last part. I think you got cut off.
Oh, sorry. So I was just wondering, do you see that King Abdullah II is basically playing this card with the ousting of Mohamed Morsi and showing the U.S., like, hey, we really do not support democracy or governments with a strong Islamic presence?
Yeah, I think he's definitely, you know, playing this up to all it's worth, you know, to the United States, to the West, to say, look, you know, this is what happens when you do have free and fair elections, and that's why you cannot rush Jordan to reform, especially too radically, because then, you know, there could be a similar outcome. So I think certainly the king would be saying things like this to the West.
And I mean, it seems very interesting because from what I know, Jordan likes to, even though it's a monarchy, which of course monarchies are very old-fashioned and have a lot of tradition, it seems like Jordan likes to portray itself in the international scene as a very modern country, modern government. So how do you see them basically using this idea of modernity, but also this custom of monarchy? I mean, how do you see that interacting within Jordan's relations with, say, the U.S.?
Well, Jordan has traditionally tried to convey to the international community that it's like an island of stability and that, yes, it's a monarchy, but it's an example to other, you know, neighboring countries of tolerance, moderation. And while, you know, it certainly is more moderate than certain neighboring Arab countries in terms of, you know, how it treats its people, it's still, at the end of the day, you know, the king does have absolute say and it can dissolve, you know, parliament as it has done in the past. So, you know, on the one hand, there are certain aspects of it which is enlightening and positive and modern and progressive, but it's still, you know, at the end of the day, it's still the king has absolute rule.
And then going back to one of the comments that you made earlier about the protests and the grievances of Jordanians, this issue of the growing economic problem within Jordan, and it just seems like the economic issue increasingly points to maybe more instability in the country. I mean, I know that there's statistics that Jordan's official employment rate, unemployment rate, is about 12.5%. But there are thoughts that youth employment is much higher, and of course Jordan has a huge population of young people under 30. Where do you see this playing in Jordan's, the full picture with Jordan? I mean, how do you see this affecting Jordan as well as the Jordanian government, its legitimacy, and also this whole idea of after the Arab Spring and they, you know, seeing other countries go through that? How do you see this unemployment issue facing Jordan's future?
Sure, absolutely. I think it's one of the biggest challenges. And I think you're right. The official estimate is something like 12.5%. It was probably higher than that. And you know, we have something like 60% of the population under 30. So this is a very dangerous mix when you have a lot of educated, and the Jordanian people are very educated and internet savvy. Something like half of Jordanians are online and surfing the web. You know, they are connected to the outside world. They are educated. And if they can't find employment, if they aren't working, or if they're underemployed, and if you have educated people taking jobs which are, you know, quote unquote beneath them, this is definitely a dangerous mix, and it can, if we look at, you know, all the trends that's going on in the region, certainly pose serious challenges to the government. So I would think that this would be something that the king and the parliament would really want to capitalize while it's in a position of relative strength and really address this economic situation. I mean, people, not only in Jordan, but of course, you know, all over the world, especially in the United States, there's a lot of educated people that are frustrated and can't find work. And I think, you know, Jordan is certainly no exception. So I don't see any good coming out of this if this situation continues unresolved. I mean, the status quo is unsustainable. And that's part of the reason why this whole Arab uprising, Arab Spring, began in Tunisia, when a man set himself on fire because he couldn't provide right for his family. Couldn't find
Correct.
Work.
And what is the main issue of this lack of employment in Jordan?
I'm sorry, what is the main issue with what?
With the lack of employment in Jordan. Why is there a lack of jobs? Is there a certain major factor, or is it just small factors within society?
The critics of the government will say that that the public sector, which is dominated primarily by Jordanian Palestinians, it's bloated, and it's not, there's just not enough kind of new jobs to demand to satisfy all the new college graduates and educated people that are ready to work, and private sector, and government security, usually goes to the native East Bankers or Bedouin origin. So there's also instances of corruption that we hear about from time to time. So I think it's a mix of different things. Probably just simply not enough job creation to meet up with the demand.
And so, focusing on this, of course, the war in Syria, Jordan is pretty much almost a neighbor with Syria, we could put it that way, and we're hearing about this influx of refugees fleeing Syria and coming into Jordan, which Jordan, of course, is not the biggest country, and it already has a huge amount of Palestinian refugees, and this influx of Syrian refugees is just going to put a huge, even bigger taxing toll on the country. What do you see the effects of this on Jordan?
I think this is taking a monumental toll on the Jordanian economy. Right now, more than half of 1 million Syrian refugees are located in Jordan, which is about 10% of the population. And I think Jordanian Foreign Minister Nasser Judeh recently said in an interview with Al Jazeera that if these current trends persist, Jordan could be 40% refugee by mid-2014. So the largest refugee camp, Sitari, which is located in northern Jordan, east of Mafraq, there's 130,000 refugees. So that's like the size of, U.S. cities. And that is now Jordan's fourth largest city, and it's entirely comprised of refugees. That is not sustainable. And this is on top of the fact that there's already, like you mentioned, an estimated 1.9 million UN-registered Palestinian refugees in Jordan and approximately 500,000 Iraqi refugees, although only, I think, something like 30,000 are actually registered. So absolutely, this is taking a huge toll on the Jordanian economy, which is already dependent upon international aid because it's energy poor, it lacks oil. The U.S., officially, I think, gives Jordan something like $660 million annually, but I think the number is actually quite higher given Jordan's recent security concerns in Syria.
And going to the fact that U.S. is providing money to Jordan and relief to Jordan, let's talk about this U.S.-Jordanian relationship. What is the stability of the U.S.-Jordanian relationship to explain it to our listeners?
The U.S.-Jordanian relationship goes back for decades, since, Jordan's independence in 1946. It really kind of crystallized and became even more of a strategic ally and asset for the United States after the signing of the Israeli-Jordanian peace treaty in 1994. So the U.S. does supply aid, economic aid, military assistance. Jordan is probably one of the closest Arab allies to the United States. It is, for the most part, very reliable and dependable. Good relations with Israel, good relations with the EU, with the West. That's kind of like the basis of the relationship.
And then
it's more or less stability.
Right. It seems like a very stable relationship, and you tend to see a lot of photo ops with the Jordanian royal family and the various presidents that we have through the years. So it seems to be a very stable and friendly relationship compared to some of our other relationships within the Middle East. So going back to the effect of Syria on Jordan, there are also reports of not only refugees flooding into Jordan, but also there are some reports of militants coming into Jordan. Have you heard about that, and could you explain that a bit?
Yeah, I've heard about that. Just like with any case where there's, like a power vacuum or instability, that's when you have bad guys coming into your territory, and there are elements of that, and that's something which is of great concern, obviously, to the Jordanian authorities and their intelligence services, which, is, by the way, is one of the best in the region. They are closely monitoring that. But, Islamist radicals, Al-Qaeda, all of those have traditionally, that is a threat and a concern to the Jordanian kingdom. They've experienced with that in the past. So, certainly on their radar, for sure.
And how does the Jordanian government deal with these, I guess we could call them radicals?
Well, I think, there is intelligence sharing with neighboring countries and, people that are probably persons of interest that are suspected militants or radicals, I am sure that they are monitored, if not detained or deported by the authorities. Jordan has a very excellent security service with a firm grip. So, you can't seal the border. You can't prevent everyone from coming in, but I think, they tend to do a pretty good job of making sure and preventing attacks on their soil.
And touching on this basis of Jordan's strong security forces, military, there is a lot of sharing between Jordanian military and U.S. military. And, of course, with the increase in violence in Syria and the war continuing on, not seeming to have an end, there's reports that Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel has recently ordered the deployment of more American troops to Jordan. And basically their reasons for this were that troops were going to be there to assist the Jordanians. Why don't we talk about that a little bit?
Sure, absolutely. This, by the way, Chelsea, is somewhat of a double-edged sword because, the United States has sent Patriot battery missiles, F-16 fighter jets, and something like 700 soldiers and advisors to help prevent, Syrian spillover into Jordan. However, a majority of Jordanians actually resent the American presence on their soil. They do not want any kind of direct Jordanian military intervention in Syria, which could destabilize the kingdom. So on the one hand, they want, Jordanians want security and stability. They don't want their country to end up like what's going on in Egypt or Syria, but they also don't want a Jordanian direct involvement in Syria. It's something of like a catch-22. But most Jordanians do not like seeing U.S. forces on the ground in their country, even if it is to help, prevent the kingdom from being destabilized by some kind of spillover.
And then, with this relationship between U.S. and Jordanian military and this fact of, we don't really want this foreign element in our country, yet they are there. Do you think this also affects, or should I say undermines, the monarchy's, legitimacy of the monarchy in the people of Jordan's eyes?
It would undermine the monarchy's legitimacy if an event happened where basically the United States had to, directly protect or resurrect the king if there was some kind of situation where his throne was in immediate danger.
But other than that, you don't see that it would lower the standard thought of the monarchy in Jordan?
It might, up to a point, but I think, it is kind of like complicated in the sense that I think Jordanians do want stability, and they do not want to see their country, descend into chaos like neighboring countries. Which is why, by the way, I think a lot of the grievances and the protests have been temporarily placed on a hold. It's not to say that, you know, people haven't lost interest in demanding changes and change and reform to the government, but I think people are also, you know, frankly, they're frightened that if the people protest too much against the king, that there could be an Egyptian scenario or a Iraqi scenario or a Syrian scenario, which would just be chaos.
And then going back to basically aid coming to Jordan to help with this influx of Syrian refugees, I mean, other than the U.S., let's put it this way, what other institutions or countries are helping Jordan with this, I guess you could even call it a crisis, with so many people coming into the country?
Yeah, you know, Jordan receives help from the Arab League, you know, neighboring Arab countries, in particular countries in the Persian Gulf, the International Monetary Fund, the EU, really the international community. I mean, Jordan is reaching out in a very open way. It needs help. You know, it cannot handle this situation on its own, this economic situation with the influx of refugees, that is, yeah.
And looking at this situation as it is now, and I'm sure it's going to keep growing, what do you think this foretells for Jordan's future?
You know, it's unpredictable, but I think if the current trends do persist, I mean, this really could be a very destabilizing effect on the kingdom. You know, Jordan really does. They are in a delicate situation right now. They are stable. I don't think there's like a direct threat where we're going to see the monarchy disappear anytime soon. However, you know, they are definitely bearing the burden of a lot of different refugee groups right now, so they need all the help and support they can get from the international community. And I think if that help isn't truly delivered in a timely and organized fashion, we may very well see a situation that could spin out of control.
Well, hopefully that will not happen, because one less country you don't need to have to worry about, really. To wrap up the conversation, we always like to give our guests an opportunity to touch on something that we haven't touched on the talk, or have a last say, or mention something that is important to them. So I'd like to give you that opportunity.
Okay. I guess I just want to emphasize, you know, to people who may be concerned that uprisings in the Arab world could follow suit in Jordan, and that the monarchy could be overthrown, I would just say, take a look at history. The Kingdom of Jordan has overcome many challenges. There were Palestinian groups in the 1960s, 1970 that tried to, you know, overthrow the king, King Hussein, and you know, Jordan persevered and overcame that obstacle. It's been through a lot of challenges in its history. Jordan has proved to be, it's kind of ironic, for a country whose borders are very artificial after World War I that were carved up from the British and French, Jordan has really proved to be one of the more stable countries in the region. So, but you know, then again, never say never. I think it's very unpredictable. Things change in the Middle East day to day, but Jordan appears to be stable for the time being. But this is certainly a period of crisis where it is reaching out to the international community for aid and support to help cope with the unprecedented rise of refugees.
Well, I thank you so much for coming on the show, Michael. And as I mentioned earlier, please, when you're listening to this talk, check out the link for Michael's website, which is Sharnoff Global Views. And we hopefully will have you again on the show sometime to have another topic. But until then, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Chelsea.
Thank you. Bye.